Continue the conversation then. Martha Jones, author of the forthcoming book, Vanguard, How Black Women Broke Barriers, Won the Vote, and Insisted on Equality for All. That does it for our broadcast. Special thanks to Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guster, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Shafe, Maria Tarasena, Carla Wills, Tommy Warnoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe, save lives, wear a mask.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock as we struggle to get everything together in time for the next program, which is, if I recall, Off the Wall. Another exciting edition of Off the Wall here on this Tuesday evening. Literally flying by the seat of our pants here. Greetings, Kyle.
Hi.
It's Emmanuel over here. These weeks are flying by, aren't they? Basically getting everything organized in the nick of time. Which I guess I ruin the effect by saying we got it done in the nick of time. Otherwise, nobody would know that how close we cut it. It's I don't know what the day is. It's August
Tuesday.
Something. Yes, Tuesday. I know that much. But it's August, what, the 18th?
19th.
20th? Okay, it's the second day of the Democratic Convention.
I'm enjoying it. I'm on the verge of speaking in tongues. I was going to say hallelujah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say praise, all kinds of things. But, you know, it's a cool time to be a citizen because there's a lot of people that want your attention right now.
That is certainly true. Absolutely. But they kind of have our attention, just seeing all the things that are going on. What do you think of the first day yesterday?
The first day was interesting. It was a tight bit of programming, I guess, in prime time, which featured a lot of music, a lot of speeches from various representatives and leadership people, even people from the opposing party, which was noted and discussed. I think it's uncontroversial.
Well, I was upset by that because, as you know, AOC is only getting 1 minute to speak.
Yeah.
Only 1 minute. And all of these Republicans are being piled onto each other. I think there are four of them, five of them, and it was getting a little bit ridiculous. I mean, how many... you need to cater to your progressive base more than the base of the other party. But that said, after seeing what they did with it yesterday, I'm not as upset because they went through them in such rapid fire. I think the whole thing was done in about 2 minutes. And it was effective to see all these Republicans stand up and say Donald Trump is not the future. We need to make a change. Okay, yeah, you do need to say that, but not at the expense of the people that are fighting for your own party and your own beliefs. I still think AOC should get more time. She is a freshman representative, true, but she has a lot to say. She's accomplished a lot, and I think we would do well to hear her. But that said, go ahead.
No, I just would say that the observation that I think is linked to this is that there's so much that they can do with a platform, and having representatives from other parties are you know, it's one thing to show that's the level of participation and willingness to hear from those people in a nonpartisan way, but you miss out on getting the details of the platform, and that's actually going to bring in voters, because what I think has been observed is that there's really no platform that Trump has, and that the Democrats can really drop the ball by just focusing on why Trump is not. Yeah, we know that, and it's good to hear a roster of people that agree from his party, but that's not the point. Okay, the point is the platform.
I got to stop you right there, Kyle. The memory card just filled up on our archive, and you need to fix that because I'm running all the other things. Yes, this is what happens to us. In the middle of a show, the memory card decides to fill up. It doesn't even warn us. It doesn't say it's getting low. It's just, you know what? That's it. So I'm sorry, gents. You're going to have to take the show from the archive and merge them together. So you'll see a difference in quality. You'll see the difference between the quality of our archive on WUSB.FM and the difference when we record directly from the makeshift studio here at our makeshift facilities. And while I try to kill time while Kyle is negotiating with the with the player, you can update us, Kyle, as this is going on. No, you can't. Talk and do that at the same time. Okay, well, we're trying to fix that. We are. I'm sorry, folks. This is what happens when you're isolated in a remote location because of pandemics. I want to talk about Michelle Obama's speech, but I need Kyle to do that because it was a really good speech, and I think we both have things to say about it. You know, remember when you used to be able to hit one button and erase a file and make space? You can't do that anymore, do you? You're not able to do that. This is really unfair, Kyle. You're just making me talk to you're working on something, and I've absolutely
well,
nothing.
Well, I'm starting in an older file, and then I
want erase the oldest file there is.
Obviously, that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
You need me to... I would have been done with it by now.
Is it using a pencil eraser to erase it? How long does it take to erase a damn file?
Where does it even talk about that?
Oh, my God.
I just want to delete you.
Yeah, it's really crazy. Well, we had Hurricane Kyle. We didn't have Hurricane Kyle. We had tropical event or something. It was really kind of a weird tropical storm, if it even was that. I think it was for about 20 minutes. This is the storm we've been waiting for since last year when we found out that Kyle was going to have a storm named after him. But it formed in the weirdest way. It formed off the coast of North Carolina. You never see storms like that form. They usually form down in the tropics. That's why they're tropical storms. But this one formed right next to the east coast of the United States. But the effect of that was that it started veering out into the Atlantic Ocean almost immediately. I believe the rain that we had over the weekend was because of Kyle, but not much else happened as a result of that. So Kyle just kind of drifted harmlessly out into sea, and that was the end of it. It took place in just a couple of days. So I'm sorry for the disappointment. Next time, I don't know why they recycle names, because there's plenty of names you can use. You never have to repeat names if you simply use A, B, C, etc. But they recycle them about every 10 years or so. It's like they have no imagination. Okay, Kyle, did you finally erase a file and start it over again? Congratulations.
Yeah, you say this, said as though I'm the problem.
Well, no, you're not the problem. The problem is technology. Because
we knew this.
Because simply erasing a file is no longer easy. What steps did you have to go through to erase a file?
I found the right menu.
You have to find the right menu
to browse.
You have to browse.
And I selected the file. I had to know what kind of the numbering scheme. You know, familiarize myself with that, and then
why don't they just tell you the file
eventually
names?
In that mode.
Okay, and then what? Do you have to type it manually with no keyboard?
No, I had to select through a menu. I mean, is this really that important?
People want to know why it took so long to simply fix a simple minor problem.
Oh, you think it's fixed?
And you know, it's not fixed because we still have to splice the show together now from the archive to this. It's insane. I love new technology, but I hate the stupidity that comes with it, where you have to jump through hoops to get simple things done. Why can't we keep the simplicity of the old ways and the modern technical whizzes of the new things that we have? I like that kind of a world.
Well, it's also keeping it all straight. There's so many different things. You takes you back. You know, you have to take a trip down memory lane to refamiliarize yourself with a particular operating system of a whatever device. And that was a, you know, like you said, flying by the seat of the pants sort of situation.
Okay, so we're going to have some fun after the show. But let's have fun during the show now. Let's.
Yeah, you're saying Storm Kyle rocked your socks.
No, we're done with that. Kyle's out to sea, and it's over until the next time they name the storm Kyle.
Yeah, in a sensible direction towards the North Atlantic.
It was probably the most polite tropical storm I've seen in a long, long time. It formed in a weird place, and it disappeared almost immediately. Mm-hmm. better luck next time, I guess.
Yeah, lazy days through the rest of the alphabet.
Well, the Kyle storms were getting more and more threatening as the years went by. I think there were three of them altogether, and the last one killed 8 people. Yeah. And the one before that killed 1 person, and the other one before that didn't kill anybody, and now you're back to that. So.
Well, this isn't the year. This isn't the year. We've got too much going on.
We do.
And a lot needs to be said.
A lot does need to be said. Well, speaking of people who said things, so Michelle Obama last night.
I heard.
What a speech. You saw it, too. We watched it together. What
it
a
astounding.
Speech that was. That was incredible.
Astounding, yeah. I was blown away.
Uh-huh.
I really like her drawing connections between the going high sentiment, and I think that was something people really wanted to hear.
Well,
and it reaffirms, I think, what a lot of people have been doing in their community and in their families and in their networks of people.
Uh-huh.
And getting some affirmation around that, I think, is important.
Well, it's different because everything is virtual, and it kind of reminds me of what we just went through with the Hope Conference, where everything was pretty much virtual there as well. They have to either pre-record talks or give them live, as we did.
Yep.
And it changes the dynamic completely, because instead of having all these cheering people, you have silence. And kind of like now when we're doing radio, we're used to it because Ordinarily, we'd be filling, you know, an arena or something and having people not letting us finish sentences because of all the applause and cheering and all that. It gets tiring after a while, really. The more intimate, I'd have to wait 20 seconds for the laughter to die down on that. But, you know, this more intimate setting of just being in a quiet location where you set the pace. All right. And if there are people missing the next thing you say because they're laughing so hard, that's on them. They can play it back, assuming that we can get the show, you know, archived properly. And Michelle Obama had that same challenge. She wasn't speaking to an arena filled with people. The pacing was different. But I think it also allowed her to be able to be herself more and not have to react to how the crowd was reacting to her. She could say what she wanted to say. And boy, did she say that well.
Uh-huh.
She was amazing. I like how she said that she doesn't like politics. I think that was so honest. She just came across as honest. Honesty is the right word, I think. Just giving her assessment of where we are and where we will go if we're not careful. And that needed to be heard. That needed to be heard like that. And it was a great way to end the first night.
Yeah. Diplomatic, but spoke to the moment, spoke to the power and the need for people to exercise that power through the vote, mm-hmm. for sure.
I like how she said that Trump is in over his head.
Yeah, that's a quick, concise way to put it.
Did not pull any punches.
No.
So Trump, of course, did not let that go unremarked. Do you know what he said?
Yeah, no, you're plugged into that. Mm-hmm. That wire.
Yeah, I try. But what he said in reply to her remark was, well, she's in over her head. He used the exact same remark back. That was his insult. It's like, I know you are, but what am I? That's he couldn't come up with a different insult. She said he's in over his head, and she said he's in over his head, and he said she's in over her head. That's our president.
I think we expect more out of playground bullies.
He noticed the same thing I noticed, that the speech wasn't given live.
Oh, and he picked up on that.
He picked up on that. Well, for one thing, when you watch C-SPAN, they get it right. You know, CNN does not seem to understand what the word live means. They say live at 3 in the morning when they're rebroadcasting something from earlier because it was recorded live. Who cares? Everything is recorded live. But C-SPAN will say, this is live, this was recorded earlier. It's not so hard. I don't know why CNN can't get this. We were watching C-SPAN, and the live thing that Bernie Sanders had, because he was live. And by the way, track down the extra 2 minutes of him setting up for that live broadcast. It's hilarious. and Michelle Obama, that little live thing went away, so you knew that it was taped. Also, there were a couple of things that you picked up on. The number she gave for the death toll wasn't up to date, and that's actually something that Trump noticed as well. Here's what he said: he said she's in over her head, and frankly, she should have made the speech live, which she didn't do. She taped it. Like, these are insults. And it was not only taped, it was taped a long time ago because she had the wrong deaths. She didn't mention the vice presidential candidate. I mean, first of all, taping a talk is not a bad thing. He's using that as an insult. But did you get the other thing he said here? She had the wrong deaths? Like, okay, you are paying attention then to the death toll. Is this really the point you want to make, that 20,000 more people have died in a period of time, or how many thousand have died, and that is what you're going to call her on? That she taped something and it was accurate when she taped it, and everything else she says was accurate as well, but you're going to say, oh, this speech is invalid because you didn't have the full number of the amount of people I'm responsible for having died. Yeah, so therefore, we can't take anything you say seriously. We had another 10,000 people die over the last 10 days. Yeah, you didn't say that, did you? Never mind that I'm responsible for it. You got the number wrong. Words are failing me. They are actively failing me. There are no words. It's just, it's oh boy.
Selective reality he wants to project and have everyone, you know, pick up on after they lick the toads and start this waking nightmare of a hallucination.
There was a response to this, actually, from Cody Keenan, who is Barack Obama's chief speechwriter. He said on Twitter, "I can confirm Barack Obama will have the most up-to-date figures for his turn tomorrow night." So if you're looking for an updated death toll, okay, tune in to Barack Obama. He'll be live, if that matters to you so much. Oh, my God. I can't wait till next week when the Republicans have their turn. That's going to be fun. But you know, I remember last time, 4 years ago, watching the two conventions and seeing how inclusive and filled with diversity the Democratic convention was and how full of hatred the Republican convention was. I could not, for the life of me, envision those people actually being put in charge. We were saying, can you imagine? Can you imagine the nightmare that would be? And, of course, that's exactly what wound up happening. But I also recall during that time, there was all this sniping at the Democrats because of the way they presented their message. There was some kind of song they liked to play, and people were sniping at this. Even people who agreed with them. We just spent all this time sniping instead of saying, okay, you know, might not be exactly the way I say it or phrase it or express myself, but I'm standing behind you because I don't want that. Not enough people did that. And that's what why we got what we got.
Truly, truly. Yeah. And I think this time the being choosy is not so important as what's good for the entirety of the populace that are so adversely affected by the handling of the whatever, you know, pick your crisis.
Mm-hmm. It can happen again, though. It can happen again if we're not careful. And I see the same symptoms. I see people who are dissatisfied. I was dissatisfied with the way they were setting this up when I saw all the Republican speakers. I've modified my opinion based on how they presented it. But still, when I was upset, I mean, I was being critical of them, but I would never say you should launch a protest vote. Or as I've seen many people say on Twitter that I'm not going to vote for either because they're both corrupt. My God, you have to be the biggest idiot in the world to say something like that. If you're a progressive, if you call yourself a progressive and you are actively encouraging people not to vote for Biden, you are worse than a fascist, because at least you know what to expect from a fascist. But this, you're turning people who would help us get out of this hell and extending the hell. And why? Because you're not getting it your way immediately. I can imagine what kind of a toddler you were. But this is exactly what we do not need right now. This going to be the issues that you are concerned about. Those issues will be addressed. Make no mistake about that. And they will be addressed a whole lot quicker with someone like Biden in office than someone like Trump in office. They may never get addressed at all if another 4 years of Trump happens. So give it some thought, for God's sake. This is your country that you're gambling with here, and getting people not to do the right thing. Yeah, it sucks. There's only two choices. There should be multiple choices, but there are only two choices right now. Deal with it and make the system better once we survive this. But if you just throw a hand grenade into the whole thing, well, you might as well just start thinking of a new name for a new country, because we ain't going to be here in 4 years.
And don't consider that the nominees themselves represent all of the kind of transformation that's needed and that we deserve in contrast to the current administration. Recognize how many different people will actually be the actors making up the various cabinets and appointees and committees of a Biden-Harris administration in entirety. Like, there's a lot more than just Kamala Harris or Biden per se that will implement the kind of vision that is being talked about this week at the convention. And like I said before, they have so very much room to not screw this up and really focus on an actual platform, because a lot of people, I think, that are on the fence as Trump voters, prior Trump voters, or having voted for him previously, they want solutions and ideas, things that add up to something, and there is not anything he has other than these failings to really point to. I mean, the economy, these things aren't, we know, very good measures. Even joblessness right now, I mean, how that's being measured, people who have stopped working and or are working, becoming working poor or losing homes due to evictions and so forth, like the real scope of what's going on is not something that he can really point to as something that's an accomplishment. Whereas we can fill in with these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
As a Democratic platform is a broader vision. At least that's, I think, what they're communicating through the conventions themselves, like just what they have to offer and that. That's why they're kind of cycling through the voices. I know there's like a variety critique where they're kind of going through it too quickly for any one voice to really stick with the audience.
Well, there's a lot of voices.
I think it worked for what it is, and as a, you know, we'll see what it evolves, and see some of the live coverage tonight, and of course the Republicans next week.
To see George Floyd's family.
Oh wow!
That spoke volumes. Because, you know, in the past, I think the Democrats might have been a little timid to embrace so readily.
Like second thoughts about being affiliated with what, BLM or...
Yeah, do we really want to alienate police? Well, yeah, you do. If they're going to stand up for this kind of thing, you do want to alienate them. They deserve it then.
If it wasn't this kind of violence, it would have been gun violence and March for Our Lives, that kind of thing. You know, the mass, you know, Las Vegas and, you know, some of these really sick events we've endured over the last 4 years. And, of course, the demise of the NRA. I think that would have been a key point on the topic of violence.
There's still time for that.
This definitely, you know, racialized violence and inequities in the system that we're trying to get people to participate in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are equally as important and deserve the conversation in and amongst the other sort of big picture platform things.
Well, getting people to participate, that's the key lately. And we've seen what's been going on with the post office and basically the threat that Trump has unleashed on them. Some breaking news today. Embattled Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, who has had rallies outside both his D.C. and North Carolina homes in the last week, he reversed course today, said that all changes being made to the Postal Service would be suspended until after the November 3rd election. And this comes just as 20 Democratic states announced plans to file federal lawsuits.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, Democratic states are the ones filing lawsuits. So that means there's 30 Republican states that aren't. Is that what I take out of this? So this has become a Democrat versus Republican issue. That's insane. That is insane to say something like that, where the only people concerned about the future of the post office are the people concerned with changing the current regime. That just shows you how readily people are giving up their values. The post office, for God's sake, you can't get any more American apple pie than that.
It's the leadership, though, of those states, E. It's definitely the craven lockstep, following along, being a foot soldier for the administration itself, because they...
The Lee Zeldin effect, I think, is the word you're trying to look for.
I think, yeah, the Zeldinite mm-hmm. Disciples.
Look it up. It's in the dictionary.
Absolutely. It's also a breed of lapdog.
Stop Zeldinighting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's,
uh-huh.
You can say that now.
But the emphasis to go after that institution is actually not reflective. I mean, I don't disagree, but it's, I think, around 70 or almost 80%, somewhere in that range, I heard this morning, over general approval for the post office among citizens, among people in rural areas, especially.
Who doesn't approve the post office? So it's like the sky.
No, they tried with that, nice try, but it is like a hornet's nest. I mean, people are happy with their mail in this country, and it activated those states. And yes, it's unfortunate the others are in a chokehold of leadership proportions. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's actually, and in what has been said, I think, in the reporting, is that it is not reflective of what the general populace thinks of the post office. They don't want people messing with it. It disrupts business. It's disrupting a lot of things.
And I think what you say is true of most people. But again, look at this. Only 20 Democratic states have challenged this, which tells me that the leadership in those other places is woefully out of touch and doesn't care.
And very well may be replaced. I mean, this is what's at stake, and I think that's what a lot of the Democrats had been saying in the initial parts of the convention and the lead up to it.
Uh-huh. Well, let's hope there are changes, because people seem afraid of change, and a change like Joe Biden is not the change I want, but it is a change enough to get in the direction that I want to go. And I dare say maybe those people who are so afraid of any kind of change would be able to swallow somebody like Joe Biden a lot more readily than, say, they were Hillary Clinton or somebody more progressive. But it does open the door for more progressive policies and just moving in the right direction. Because, like I said, another 4 years of this, I don't think we have a country at the end of it, not one we recognize. And it's sad and scary. So anyway, reversing course, not going to continue removing mailboxes and cutting service. Well, I don't know what this means exactly. Does this mean that the overtime is coming back? Does this mean that mail is going to speed up and get back to the delivery times that it was before this guy took over? Or are they going to have some other trick up their sleeves?
Well, he's going to be in front of Congress on Friday, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he has to testify. So that's going to be covered on various... Not enough, though. We've noticed this. The convention wasn't covered very widely. I mean, we should be surprised. But commercial media, again, falling very, very short. Why do we need to hear baseball games and crap over such important events? But it is... yeah, it's going to be a hearing about specifically the post office, and I think representatives are being called back specifically for that hearing. So he's gotten the attention of those governors of at least that many states, and then the I don't know exactly what committee or panel is going to be asking the questions, but I believe it's some form of the House committee to press him a bit.
Okay, but you know,
there's a lot to answer for.
This is what it's great. I like seeing people, you know, sweating under fire. But where does this go? The House passes a bill, and Trump vetoes it, and that's it. So what have we accomplished? Yeah, we have a hearing, we have some sound bites, but nothing ever changes. And I think that's a failing in our system. I don't know what the answer is, but it just seems like we're having all kinds of investigations. And the person that we're investigating just has ultimate power over all of it, so it never actually changes.
Well, we shouldn't be satisfied with it, that he's going to not completely sabotage a system that was working and could handle what it's going to be called upon to do this fall. So,
but he's already said he's going to do exactly that. He pretty much admitted it.
Right, but like just basically agreeing that you'll do your job at all is not that's not compliance with having perhaps broken the law, and I think that's why people want to they've been calling for inquiries and finding out as much as possible, especially directly from this individual that was appointed by Trump.
That's the thing; he was appointed. He was never actually voted in. Didn't have hearings. Any of that. So, so much that needs to be answered. So much that is just wrong in so many ways. All right. So we've got all kinds of other things that are happening as well. School's opening.
Yeah, I heard. I heard the campus is open.
Is it open already?
Well, people move back in.
Okay.
They are moving in this week, maybe tomorrow or the day after.
That's going to be interesting. I have mixed feelings about this because while I definitely want to see things get back to normal, I don't know if we're ready to get back to normal yet. And we've seen so many idiots out there that do things wrong and that put everybody else at risk.
People have a wide concept of what normal is.
Okay. What's your concept?
Well, I mean, even if you just having a mask like near you, hanging off your ear, you know, under your chin, like just generally having a sort of a symbol of a mask isn't the same thing as actually wearing one.
No, it's not. It's completely not. And what are those things people are wearing over their faces that are doing more harm than good?
Oh, they're called gaiters.
Gaiters.
Neck gaiter.
Like bandanas, right?
Yeah, it's like a tube.
So apparently
that
they
wear they, around your neck.
Apparently they hold on to the germs longer than if you don't have one on. So it does more harm than good if you have one of those things on. And so many people are wearing those.
Yeah, and that's mainly because there hasn't been clear guidance at the federal level about exactly what people ought to wear. In fact, the more it's been looked into, the more mask wearing and adherence to it is being advocated and in required. I know France is now requiring it inside and out. Outdoors, if you're in the city, in urban or suburban environment, and even I guess if you can't maintain distance, I mean, it's not even so much that, it's just that if you're out among people in the public, you must cover your face with something that they've essentially agreed upon too, which as I said, we haven't really found. We hadn't had clear guidance, and of course, we're trying to protect these supply chains and so on.
Well, Spain this past week had demonstrations against wearing masks. So they can be just as stupid as we are in other countries. There could be just as many people or a percentage of people that don't get it or that simply think they're above everything. And that are responsible for basically having it all happen again.
Yeah, we're going to hear about the motorcycle rally in like a week or two.
Oh my God, I almost forgot about that. 250,000 people. We're going to hear something about that. And that's how I feel about school. We're going to hear something about that in the weeks ahead, depending on how it's dealt with.
A number of colleges, I know North Carolina, one college had to reclose and go back to virtual only. They had a couple parties or some kind of spreading events and several people sick, and that forced closure. Reclosure, basically, right as soon as they had opened physically,
and that's because
that could happen at Stony Brook.
It could definitely happen at Stony Brook, but in states down there, there seems to be, and this is nothing against the states down there or the people down there, but there does seem to be a higher concentration of dumbasses who
selfishness
simply don't believe that this applies to them, and that's why the numbers are higher. Now you don't have as many people, so the death toll is not as high. That makes sense. If you have a city like New York City having the same thing, obviously the death toll is going to be higher. It's got nothing to do with the fact that there are more minorities, as they will try and argue for some reason, because they argue that for every reason. But in this particular case, the numbers in North Carolina, certainly in Georgia and Florida, are much higher percentage-wise than they are in New York. So that's the hope I have in New York, is that I think it's below 1% infection rate, which means that it's not as contagious because of the overall numbers. Now, that can change, but right now, those numbers are good. So opening schools seems safe. If we continue to act intelligently, those numbers will stay safe. But all it takes are a few people who don't do that. And that's what I worry about. Now, locally, our school district is the Three Village School District. They had a plan. They had an ambitious plan, in-person instruction for students every day with masks strongly encouraged, though not required, when students could not stay safely apart. And then parents saw that plan They did not go for it. They did not go for it at all. One said, I think it's horrendous. They just don't seem to be taking things seriously in terms of how easily the virus could spread. Right here, Stony Brook, Setauket. That's our school district. After an outcry, administrators of the roughly 5,900 student district are walking back those plans, introducing a remote learning option and making masks mandatory. But they should have known better. We're here in New York. We've been through this already. If the Three Village School District can't get that straight, well, how about other school districts? How about colleges? How about other states? So it's really going to be a challenge in the weeks ahead. And I just wonder what people with kids are thinking right now.
Yeah, they're probably really taking a look at all the options and how many things they can opt out of. Because if they're barreling ahead and forcing certain things that just are beyond parents' control, parents will take control. They'll do whatever they have to do. Start homeschooling. They're practically doing it anyways.
Yeah, as long as they know the facts, as long as they're told what is going on, they can actually make an informed decision as to whether or not this is a safe plan. And that was not a safe plan. Masks are not mandatory. With kids, you have to really think these things through.
That's like being afraid of a backlash, almost. Well, I mean, it's a cowardly
they
thing.
They got their backlash.
Yeah, they were like trying to read their audience and thinking, okay, well, we don't want them to think we're forcing this, and totally dropping the ball with like actual guidelines and leadership, which is what you really need from a school district itself.
Here's one parent in East Setauket said... she's critical of remote learning. She supports Trump and is skeptical of COVID-19's threat. She disputed the notion that those who, like the district's original plan, politicized the issue. They're the ones making it a political issue. Not everyone else, she said, of remote learning supporters. Oh, please. You know what? It doesn't matter who's making it a political issue. It's a health issue, okay? So whoever's doing that is wrong. But by saying that it's not something to worry about, that makes you pretty wrong. That makes you really wrong. She goes on to say that it's unnecessary to have a new remote option. And this is the dynamite quote. But if that's how they want to raise their children, be my guest. It's their children that will lose, not mine. No, not really, because your kids are going to get sick and they're going to bring that sickness home to you. And they're going to spread it all throughout your family and all throughout your neighborhood. It's going to affect you. You will lose. Yeah, dumbasses are here too. I didn't read her name. I didn't want to embarrass her, but... for God's sake, people, wake up. And, you know, if you do wake up and act intelligently, this will be over. You know, guess what? People don't want to do this for the rest of their lives. It's not part of some global plan to have everybody walking around with masks and doing whatever else you think that this is part of a global conspiracy for. So, yeah, act intelligently and we'll be through this hell because it's hell for all of us.
Yeah, don't be selfish.
Okay, so are we ready for our sustaining feature?
Yeah. I still have the cover on. Hold on.
Get our minds off this.
I gotta pull it and undo that.
All right, there we go. Notice how the lights dim whenever you turn that thing on.
Yeah, it does seem to be drawing a lot, but you know, I checked the bulb. The bulb's fine.
All right,
it's in good
shape.
So
you can talk and play piano at the same time, but you can't talk and change the memory card.
Well, this is one hand.
Unbelievable. Anyway.
I had to use two hands for that.
Yeah. So this is Films of the Year That Was, where we look at the Academy Award-winning film for every year. And we're up to, what, 1976.
77.
Yeah, I think it's 1977. The Academy Award-winning films from 1977. We saw two films. We saw two films over... the past week. Let's start with a foreign film, because we just saw that recently.
Okay.
And that was a pain in the ass to get a hold of. We actually had a listener send us a copy, or send us a link to a copy. We want to thank that listener. However, let me just point out that the copy that you sent us, while it looked good, the captions, they were a train wreck. I mean, I don't understand how... It's like you plugged it into Google... and changed it to another language and then changed it back, and just it was complete nonsense.
And it really screwed up. Like, there's some Yiddish phrases and spellings of names, and so you're already paying a lot of attention to that to try to pick up on the cultural references.
Uh-huh. It comes up with nonsense words and just things that make absolutely no sense, and that happens sometimes. So we were trying to make sense of that. It wasn't working, but thank you for sending us the link anyway, because you can't find the film anywhere else. Except we did find a copy on YouTube. There was a copy actually sitting on YouTube, and we were able to see the film that way. And that was something. While the captions were better, the picture quality wasn't as good, and the captions were also many times white on white. I don't get why they ever did that.
And there was a terrible hum.
And there was a hum.
But the white on white, no outline, so you just lose the letter, like entire words, entire lines almost.
But when you're determined to see a film, you'll sit through all these challenges and get through it in the end.
And you really have to be literate, both visually and competent reading, and it has to be spelling coherent sentences, otherwise you're really thrown for a loop. Of course, you have French or other dialogue, Italian dialogue in the background, which you're sort of half listening to at the same time. It's a complex sort of consumption of media.
We have this thing playing in the background just so we can see some of the better phrases at the subtitles. I want you back, my son, as I left it.
He goes, first you go and kill his mother.
Then you proclaim yourself. Some of it makes sense, and now you come and be scandal.
Because your son has grown a Jew.
Moishi go abni your father. What does that mean?
Even if it kills... This is not... Yeah,
It got ridiculous after a few minutes, but we're glad we saw it. We felt like we really saw it. What's it about?
It's about a woman sort of along the lines of Oliver. She sort of takes in orphans.
Well, she's a former hooker.
Well,
for
right.
One thing, that's a little different.
There's a specific niche market, I guess.
She also was in Auschwitz, okay. So that's different.
Yeah, it's sort of like a daycare.
Yeah, a daycare for kids of other hookers who either their parents have disappeared or are just not very responsible. So she's basically taking care of all these kids. And the story is about her, this is in the red light district of Paris. The story is of her gradually getting older, and she winds up, I think, basically with two kids left, Moishi and Mohammed. Moishi, a Jew, Mohammed, Arab. She's very racist. She says all these racist things against the Arabs, but she's respectful and raises the kid as Muslim, has his Muslim teacher, and basically... Follows the request of the parent that left him with her. Now we find out why she didn't tell him anything about his parents. It's a bit of a scandal. I guess we can ruin it because who's going to see this? And we're telling you now, we're going to ruin it.
Yeah, you might as well just round out the story with.
Okay, his dad killed his mom because he was jealous
and she psychotic.
Was, and she was a hooker and he was jealous about that, or I think he was also a pimp. I you know, there's all kinds of things that you just don't tell an 11-year-old who turned out to be 14 because she lied to him about that as well. And what she did, this is really kind of neat at the end, when his father finally gets out of the mental hospital that he's been confined in for the past decade or so, and is on death's door. She basically has the Jewish kid there and says, oh, you know what? I made a mistake. I raised him a Jew instead of Arab. Kind of to see what kind of a person he is. Will he accept the kid? And of course he does not. He says, this is no son of mine.
I want him the way he was.
Yeah, that was the line actually I just read, which made no sense when I read it this way. So they basically, he died right there on the spot. I guess that was convenient. And Muhammad knew that she was doing this for his own good. It's kind of a sad story. In fact, it's a very sad story. A lot of death.
Morose.
Very, yeah.
Melancholy, just drawing a lot of that sort of... I don't know, weird intersections of people bonking into each other and just sort of what becomes of this young person and all of his built experiences. And how he creates his identity around that upbringing.
It is kind of a parallel to the Arab-Israeli conflict, which, you know, 1977, that was definitely something that was front page headlines. And
a lot of allegory.
Yeah, just seeing how kids from different backgrounds are getting along or raised. But there's also a bit of kind of dark humor because, you know, she's on the top floor. She's on the sixth floor of this building, and she has to climb these stairs. Madame Rosa has to climb these stairs all the time, and it just gets harder and harder. And eventually her neighbors carry her up the stairs. Her doctor, who comes to visit her, he's getting older too. So one day she's getting carried down, and he's getting carried up by other people. Everyone's getting carried up and down these stairs. And it's just kind of bizarre and weird. And this poor kid is growing up with all these aging people around him. His Arab teacher has gone blind and keeps calling him Victor because he thinks he's Victor Hugo. So he's kind of losing his mind a little bit. Yeah, so there's positive and there's negative. But it's a good story.
And she wants what's best for him. She doesn't want him to be to succumb to any kind of anything resembling the life that his mother and father were.
Look at this. He's smoking. He's smoking. A kid is smoking.
Yeah, I think
that's okay, apparently.
Indeed. And he gets taken in by this couple, I guess, that are reporters, and they do sort of interview him and feature his story in certain ways. And he talks and narrates, and that becomes something that's interwoven with the picture itself. And that, I think, is an interesting effect because you're hearing his own words.
And the that was the foreign film that we saw, 1977, Madame Rosa. We recommend it if you can find it. Well, it's on YouTube, so you can find it. But again, you'll be frustrated by the white-on-white subtitles.
And the hum.
And the hum. There's a bit of a hum there. And if somebody has this film and has good subtitles and has the ability to release it, please do. It won the Academy Award, for God's sake. The 1977 domestic film that won the Academy Award is Woody Allen's Annie Hall.
Annie Hall.
One of my favorites. In fact, I remember seeing this in a theater. You know, it was just, we were talking about crowds of people laughing and having, you know, missing dialogue because of that. There's a scene in there where Woody Allen is asking about this cocaine that's being offered to him, how much it's worth, and they say $3,000 or something like that, and he sneezes and it goes everywhere. I remember being in a theater, that scene, people were laughing for like 30 seconds. And in fact, I read about this, they actually had to insert more scenery without dialogue because people were missing the lines following it. They were laughing so much. So I can attest to that. That definitely was one of the funniest films I remember seeing as a kid. And
yeah, I remember that actual joke from this film more than the film itself.
Uh-huh. And there's a lot of really good scenes in there. Paul Simon's in there.
It does a lot of photography on Long Island itself.
And Diane Keaton is a treasure in this film. I think she's overlooked way too much. She is the real magic of the film that makes it the unique bit that it is. Just basically kind of an oddball in Manhattan who meets up with Woody Allen, and they have a fling and New York, California, Long Island. And you just, I like seeing films that that capture an era. Like, I got excited by the last scene where, I'm sorry, I'm just weird this way, that you see a don't walk sign, the old-fashioned don't walk signs. Anybody remember this? You just say, don't walk, two lines, and then the walk would switch to green when it said walk. So it would share the walk with the don't walk, and it would turn green. That changed, and they stopped turning green. It turned white. And then, for some reason, they couldn't share the walk anymore, so don't walk was on top and walk was on the bottom. And then they changed to the hands, which upset people to this day because they think it's an attack on the English language, which is the most insane argument I've ever heard.
And literacy.
Uh-huh. But the film itself, truly one of the greats, and he just had all sorts of classics during that period. Manhattan followed, I believe. Virtually every year he had something new out, and to this day he's still putting things out, and it's simply incredible. It really is.
I love the cars too. I think you're talking about signs, street signs, and traffic stuff, and the trains, and these little features are so cool. And in the first couple of frames, you see a bunch of Volkswagens and old 60s and 70s cars.
Well, that's what was in the street. So yeah. You know, that's the magic of filming. Like when we saw The French Connection, seeing all those scenes of Manhattan brought back memories. You know, remember the buses that had advertisements up on either side, on the top, on the roof? I don't know what you call those buses, but I remember them as a kid and seeing them moving again, hearing them going down the street. That is why you record things. That is why you capture.
I think this is getting into the heyday, really, of a lot of the location films and proper cinema. I mean, we started to see some of that with Midnight Cowboy in New York, but this era, you get less of the like big musical productions and that whole musical theater era on film and television. Mm-hmm. I think is less interesting than the kinds of stories that are, you know, taking place on site and really capture a particular scene and if it's a war or a mystery, it's mm-hmm. it's taking place in that scenery, that being so real really gives it a sort of authentic storytelling and shows how, like in the Woody Allen film, shows how weird people are, like how just chaotic and relationships. It really, you get into the development because so much of the scene is fits and gives you I think something we take for granted in so much of television now, this stuff. They're doing the work to give you real slices of a life they're portraying mm-hmm. to a point where you're really diving deeply into what kinds of weird characters they are.
Well, just seeing some of the places also, New Yorker Theater and the streets and restaurants, some still here, some not. It's so important to capture all of that as well. And of course, I forgot the Marshall McLuhan scene. That's one of the best ones.
Yeah.
I have Marshall McLuhan right here. And
his
you
fourth
know
wall.
Nothing of my work.
Breaking the fourth wall. There's a lot of that mm-hmm. is hilarious in this film.
Walking up to complete strangers in the street, asking them for relationship advice.
Yeah.
It's so
playful.
His humor doesn't land with everybody, but for me, it's not only the humor, but also the memories of a particular era. And just as you said, the
Coney Island.
What happened to Coney Island?
Where he grew up under the.
Oh, that's right. He grew up underneath the roller coaster. Do you know there's a hotel underneath that roller coaster? That was a hotel.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's no longer there. Both were torn down. But yeah, all these things that capture uniqueness and unique people in New York. Just weird people that the rest of the world doesn't understand, or the rest of the country doesn't understand. But it's good to document that.
Can't replicate it elsewhere. It really is fun to see, and I'm excited for 78.
Well, you're gonna have to wait because we have to figure out how to get those films, and we'll do that. But that is this week's feature for this
films
year. This year,
year
being 1977.
Films of the year that was 1977.
That's right, and we are out of time now. We
Gotta
are
run.
Off to the Democratic Convention. We hope you are too. Give it a look. And write to us, otw@2600.com.
Support community radio.
See you next week.
Bye.
Pay my bills to the time collector, taking more from me each day. I pay them off a few words at a time. But the spur's gone from the moment, and the moment slipped away. I used to feel like something here was mine. Now I pay them off a few words at a time. Into my pocket just so I can make some change, and I find more hands than I could ever shake. And I hope you will forgive me if I don't return your call, but there's someone watching every move I make, and I've got more hands than I could ever shake. 'Cause I'm running for my life here, out on the campaign trail, and the crowds will not forgive me if I lose. And I'd like to think I'm special, but I do know otherwise. Excuse me, but crowds will not forgive me if I'm